Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Soren Petro with you as we talk some football, brought to you by our friends at All Weather Decks. Of course, it is a great time to get outside and enjoy some social distancing. You can get out in your backyard if you don't have that deck, that patio, that screened-in porch. All Weather Decks can build it for you and do it right now and do it while keeping social distancing. They can do everything electronically, over the phone, over the email. It's All Weather Decks, great Kansas City company, 22-time winner of the Angie's List Super Service Award. Call Cass and his team at 913-206-1974. Find them online at allweatherdecks.net. Seth Walder is here, ESPN Sports Analytics writer. Seth, welcome to our Sprint guest line. We appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys having me.
What is Chris Jones? Let's start there. Our buddy Seth Kaiser posted, and I retweeted earlier today, one of your great charts or math curves, or I don't know, what's the proper term for the players?
Right. Yeah.
Just chart?
Yeah, no,
okay.
Charts are right. The plot. It's a scatter plot, yep.
Okay, a scatter plot, which does a great job of kind of showcasing the ability of defensive linemen and their ability to pass rush. You've got it broken down into edge and interior pass rushers. And so I went ahead and retweeted both of them. And I think it's a great way to analytically and then see the distance. You know, it's one thing to say a guy's fourth, right? But is he fourth but only 50% of Aaron Donald and everybody fit through 20 is right on top of him? You can't really see that if you see one guy's fourth, another guy's 20th. When you lay it out like this, you get the spatial distancing that you need to understand it. So that's one of the things we try to wrap our arms around here, right? What exactly is Chris Jones worth? So when you did this and when you look at what he does, what do you think Chris Jones is worth?
To me, I think Chris Jones is pretty clearly, at least according to the numbers, defined himself as the second best defensive tackle in the league. Aaron Donald's in a league of his own. He is elite of elite, but Chris Jones to me is an incredibly valuable player. He's the kind of guy that you save money elsewhere. You make moves for value to get someone like Chris Jones. Let me contextualize the chart for folks at home who can't see it. Right. So what we have in our charts is we have double team rate and pass rush win rate. So these are all metrics that we create using the chips and the shoulder pads that everyone has in the NFL. And so double team rate, that's pretty straightforward, right? How often a guy is double teamed. And then pass rush win rate is how often you beat your man, you beat your blocker within 2.5 seconds. That time element is critical because everyone will beat their man eventually, but you got to beat him within 2.5 seconds. Chris Jones ranks third in pass rush win rate this season behind Aaron Donald and Grady Jarrett, but he was double teamed more than either of them. Donald is still clearly the best, but if you compare, say, Jarrett to Jones, Jones is double teamed, maybe 10 percentage points more often than Jarrett. So it's just really much more impressive when you look at the chart, like you were saying. To me, Jones is an elite player in the NFL.
All right, and you said he's one of those guys that basically you sign him and then you figure out the rest, right? Is that's how good you think he is? Is that a fair way to put it?
I do. I absolutely think that. And, you know, like numbers guys like me, we're always looking for value, right? All the sort of like analytical things that you hear of, right? Like trade down and, you know, maximize talent when they're on their rookie deal. You do all that so that you can take a player like Chris Jones and pay him the money he's worth because what you're getting is one of the best players at his position.
All right, and I get a flack from some people, you know, and I mentioned Seth Kaiser. He and I debated this yesterday because I think he's in your camp. I would say I'm in your camp, but I don't see how it's feasible to do it, right? That the theory on the Chiefs is like, okay, you just sign him, you figure out the rest, except for in the NFL, a lot of the rest was already figured out over the last 2 years based on contract decisions you already made. Right, that you know the cap, like you can't get out from under Frank Clark's deal. That's not going to happen. You can't get Patrick Mahomes to play for $7 million. We know that he's going to explode into the highest paid quarterback in the NFL salary cap wise. So is the moral of the story for the Chiefs, if they do find themselves that, hey, we just can't meet his salary demands, is the moral of the story that no matter what it took, they should have figured this out a year ago?
I definitely agree with that. Yes, they should have done that a year ago. I was not a fan of the Frank Clark trade, and I promise you, I'm not just saying that now. I felt that at the time that they weren't really upgrading, and they were paying a lot to do that. Frank Clark is not a guy that performs particularly well in our pass rush win rate metrics, so I think they're overpaying. So yes, I would agree. If it were me, I would have prioritized Chris Jones a year ago rather than bringing in someone like Frank Clark, or maybe you could have brought in someone who was, I think, equivalent to Clark, even if he might have cost less.
Now, I should point out that, you know, and you haven't heard this, but people that listen to the program have heard it, that I believe I've been told Chris Jones turned down a deal in the 6 for 100 range last year. So the Chiefs made a substantial offer because he was wanting the Aaron Donald deal, which is up towards, it was $135 million. So we could say, you know, that's why I say do whatever it took. Would they have been wise without having this past season? Because the numbers that we're talking about on this graph are from this year, right?
Right. You know what? Well, I'll tell you what. I'll vamp for a hot second here, and I'll look at our numbers for 2018 because I can't remember. But I want to say.
Oh, they were really good. They were really good.
I'll vamp for you for a second
while you look, because he had the 15.5 sacks, and I know pass rush win rate isn't just sacks. This is a better way to measure it. Jadeveon Clowney doesn't have a lot of sacks, but he beats his guy a lot, which creates hurries and different things and stuff, maybe sets up other guys for sacks. I know the numbers when you find them are going to be really good for Chris Jones. And I think, you know, really these last 2 years he's risen there, and I'm going to get to the run part of it overall. But, you know, I think that's the question. And I'm open to, you know what, when he wanted Aaron Donald money, should they have given him Aaron Donald money? Because to me last year I didn't, you know, when I learned that information, I didn't think that was a bad decision to say, listen, you had a hell of a year, but you're not Aaron Donald. But then again, the job of a general manager, he's in the get it right business. It's to see over the horizon. It's to know the caliber of individual, and is he going to continue playing at this level? He did continue playing at that level when he was on the field this year for the Kansas City Chiefs, and so therefore that's why I bring it back. I mean, it may suck for Brett Veach to have to hear it, but is reality that he should have seen over the horizon and should have gone ahead and given him Aaron Donald money last year.
I think I would have to say yes, and maybe that's harsh with hindsight, but look, I pulled it up. He, in 2018, second in pass rush win rate. In 2017, he was fourth. I'm talking, as among defensive tackles. So even a year ago, we're saying, hey, we've seen consistent success from this guy in terms of winning on a play-to-play basis, and that's the kind of guy that you want to pay. Yeah, that's Aaron Donald money is a lot of money. 6 for 100, I mean, that's, you know, that would be a lower AAV than what Donald has, right? Like significantly, I think, right? So that would be like 16, 17 million.
It was basically, I was looking up the contracts. It basically would have meant that he was paid like Fletcher Cox.
Yeah. See, to me, I would do that. Like he is what Fletcher Cox was, you know, in a couple of years ago, I think. And so I think that's what you do. I think I would have made that deal, and I realize that it's easy to say that now, but I think what you're looking for are those guys that have produced consistently, and to me, Chris Jones is that guy.
So I want to be clear, the Fletcher Cox range contract is what he turned down. You're saying you would have done an Aaron Donald deal. That's what I was told he was asking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. Okay. Who knows? I'm not sure I would have got, like, is there a middle range, right? So, okay, Fletcher costs like $17 million per year. Aaron Donald's 22.5. Would he have taken 19? Would he have taken 20? That's probably where I would have gone to. Yeah, a year ago, so you had 1 year left before the potential tag. It seems like the kind of thing I would certainly rather do that than trade for Frank Clark and pay him. I think
right.
That's a no-brainer, really, when I'm thinking about it, yeah.
Well, and listen, I you know, number one, when you win a Super Bowl, you did everything right, right? That's the
right.
Feeling of the general public. Till the next season comes around and you don't win, then you're a moron again. That's just the reality of the position and how it works. I'm with you. I said I would not have given up. I didn't like giving up the first and second. If Frank Clark was a free agent, you want to sign him, great. And I think there's a side of Frank Clark and Chris Jones we haven't covered yet that we'll get to here in a second that maybe brings them closer together. But so I'm with you on the Frank Clark. I don't mind it now. They did it. They won the Super Bowl. I just didn't like. I mean, to me, you want to give up the draft picks and get a guy who's affordable. Fine. You want to pay the money and get a guy and still have the draft picks to add to your team. I'm fine with that. It was the combination of the two. I thought it was too expensive as well. But I'll be happy to wear that. You know, it may have been. This was an all in season, and they got it done. You know, to win a championship. So they got it right from that standpoint. I'm also not so sure that the Frank Clark signing didn't come after Chris Jones said no to the deal, right? Had he said yes to a Fletcher Cox type deal, maybe Frank Clark's not here. They say, okay, we're paying him, and then we'll look someplace else cheaper. My guy was Za'Darius Smith. I wanted them to sign him. I said, listen, no compensation comes with that other than, you know, you'd lose out on your, you know, getting your thirds and fourths the next year because you signed a free agent. But they lost that with Tyrann Mathieu anyway. So, you know, to me, that's how I would have played that differently. Hindsight, right? Water under the bridge. But here we sit today. Two things that jump out at me about what you said to this point. We're talking to Seth Walder. Great follow on Twitter, by the way, if you want to follow Seth's great work. It is at – what is it, Seth? It's
just at my name, at Seth Walder.
Yeah, at Seth Walder. Right, you're like me. You got your name. I was like, oh, what is the crafty thing? Oh, it's simple. That's why I couldn't remember it. But all his stuff is up there. And, of course, you can read his work at ESPN. He's their sports analytics writer. You said, like, what Fletcher Cox was a couple of years ago, right? We're talking about what he's been for the last 2 years and paying him based on what he's been for the last 2 years. What is he going to be for the next 4 to 6? Right, that's what we're talking about on this contract. And I ruffled feathers when I said I wouldn't give Eric Berry the contract. I don't ever want to have the highest paid guy at his position on my roster except for the quarterback. And people got upset. That contract was a disaster. On Justin Houston, I did the exercise of saying, if Justin Houston from here forward, when his contract came up, does this, and I gave all these sack totals, would you be happy with that after you've given him $100 million? And across the board, everybody said no. And what they were the sack numbers of Derek Thomas after his 20-sack year. Well, Justin Houston didn't even come close to approaching that, and that contract was a disaster. Why will this contract not go the way of Eric Berry or Justin Houston?
I think when you look at someone like Chris Jones, talking about a 25-year-old who has performed three years in a row, we're talking about someone who is top four in pass rush win rate at his position, which is a very stable, it's a pretty stable stat. Like year to year, the guys who produce tend to keep producing. To me, that says this is as good a bet as you can make. Obviously, there's a lot of variance in football. We know that, but you're trying to pay for production. If I'm going to bank on a guy to produce, it's the one who's only 25 and has already put in three consecutive years of that level of play. I think that's about as good as you're going to get in terms of trying to pay for a future. I agree with you. You want to pay for what you think is coming, not what he's done. But I would think that Chris Jones, what is coming, is likely to be pretty good.
All right. Next thing is everything we've talked about is pass rush. According to Pro Football Focus, he took a big step forward against the run. It's kind of like he heard all the criticism against him over his first couple years. He was a little bit better last year. He got a lot better this year. When I say this year, I mean 2019, and is playing against the run. Frank Clark, I can tell you, is light years ahead of D Ford. You mentioned like you didn't think they upgraded. The all-around game of Frank Clark's is significantly better than D Ford's, who San Francisco played like a situational pass rusher. So I do think it's clear. Would you agree that Clark is at least an upgrade over D Ford?
Yeah, sorry. I do want to be clear that I am talking, you know, what I was talking before is I am talking just specifically, I was just specifically talking pass rush. So okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, because D Ford has never set an edge in his life. And there's great. And listen, I like D Ford, the guy, and he was a stand-up guy after he, you know, lined up off sides, and I like the guy, and I'm glad he got a big contract, and I wish him nothing but the best. I'm not a hater. I am a Chiefs fan, but I'm not a hater. The kid didn't want to do that, but he is not physical. He was about 225 pounds playing for the Chiefs that year. He's a one trick up the field pass rusher, and Frank Clark sets an edge. Do you believe that Chris Jones is the full package? Because Aaron Donald blows people up on the run as well. What do you think of Chris Jones, the run defender, and how much do you ding him? When we talk about Chris Jones versus Grady Jarrett and some of the other D tackles, does he come back towards the pack a lot more when we factor in the run, or are you confident that he's a big enough difference maker in the run as well?
Well, let me say a couple of things. I think, firstly, we don't have the tools that we do in pass rush for run defense. So that's something, actually, our analyst team, we're working on a few things. But Brian Burke, who developed these metrics, one of his future or next upcoming projects is trying to do run defense. It's a lot more complicated because run blocking is not as straightforward as pass rushing. So we don't have the same kind of tools. I have to trust the same things like you're talking about, PFF or just your eyes. And I think, yeah, of course, he's not the same run defender that he is as a pass rusher, but there's also a pretty big difference in the value of those things. Passing is a much more important to the game. There's a much higher variance in the plays. And so if you're going to choose a guy to be elite in one category and, you know, okay in the other, it's far better to be elite as a pass rusher than to be and okay as a run defender than vice versa. And so to me, Chris, that's a trade-off I'm making every single day of the week if I'm a GM.
All right, let's turn our attention to what he can get out there. You know, I'm curious the fact that, like, they haven't – I unless they've had a change of heart and they're willing to up their offer, and I'm sure after this year they are willing to up their offer. It's a question of is Chris Jones now asking for even more, right? When DeForest Buckner's now at $21 million per, you really that kind of pushes Aaron Donald off to the side because Chris Jones is better than Buckner, right? Do we agree with that?
Yeah. Absolutely, yes, I agree.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. So now any ceiling that Donald had, Buckner just jammed it up beyond there. And that happens. That's the inflation of the NFL. It always happens with free agency. So his demand is probably even higher than it was last year now that he's this close. If he won't sign, right, if he says, I'm not taking whatever the Chiefs' top offer is, if he won't sign, is it possible the reason he hasn't been traded already is because – the what he's asking for, because there's a great story. Bill Barnwell on ESPN has one that says NFL free agency lessons. What happened to the record-setting deals, right? And we heard yesterday that Jadeveon Clowney's now maybe bumped down from asking for $20 million to $17 to $18 million per. There's a lot of analytics that'll say nobody's worth these top-dollar contracts, right? And that in the Patriots really always stayed away from it. Tom Brady – That's a myth on how much less he took because of all the renegotiations and the signing bonus cash he was putting in his pocket all the time. There's a lot more myth there than reality. But other than Gronkowski, they really never had the highest paid guy at any position. Is perhaps what the problem is his asking price is so high that no team wants to pay it, that analytics have crept into every team now enough that they look at it and say, we can't have one guy taking up, you know, what nowadays would be roughly – What are we looking at for this year? More than 10% of our salary cap, but in the future could be 10, 11% of our salary cap?
Yeah, I think that's possible. And I think in the situation with Jones, it's not just paying him. You have to do what the Chiefs did last year with Frank Clark. You got to trade something for him, and he's someone that's of value to the Chiefs, even if it's only for this year. Yeah, I would have thought maybe that Colts would have made the move they made for Buckner with Jones, and that would have made a lot of sense, but because they went in a different direction, maybe he just plays out the tag. To me, it's like he has a lot of value to the Chiefs, even in a one-year situation. Obviously, they are a win-now team. They are a Super Bowl contender, of course. And for him, he could obviously, if he ended up hitting the market a year from now, still make a tremendous amount of money. That would be a market resetting deal, right? I don't think there's really any question, because if he were a true free agent, I think that would happen. So, yeah, I don't think that teams want to give up a pick for the right to pay someone, except in rare circumstances. It's possible that Jones is the kind of guy that makes sense. I really did think that the Colts would have made the move for him instead of Buckner. But like you said, it takes two to tango. He's got to want to make the deal too.
Yeah, and all the deals we've seen with picks so far are across conference lines. I mean, I can see the Chiefs and Colts not want to benefit the other, which I think is foolish. Like, you have to trust in what you're doing. If you believe in what you're doing, you do it, you make your team better. You don't worry about anybody else. But we know all of sports, you know, usually doesn't work that way. No trades within the division.
I never get that. It's like, why?
I don't either.
Like, Because if you, it's not like you're giving away the player for nothing. Like, yes, you're making them better. They're giving you their first-round pick. I mean, so, you know, in the case of the Chiefs and Colts, they're both win-now teams. The times when I think it's truly bizarre are when the team that's out of contention doesn't want to trade their star to a rival. And it's like that's when you should want to trade it to your rival because you're not good right now. They're giving you a pick to help you be good for years to come and beat them. It's always like an overblown thing, or it's not overblown in terms of what happens. It's overblown in terms of what teams should do.
Two more things real quick. Win now. You use that term a couple of different times. Were the Patriots until the very end with Tom Brady ever really in a win now mode? Isn't kind of what the brilliance of what they did was, listen, we have the quarterback. All we need to do is and we have the coach. We have the schemes. We know what we're doing. And we just need to be good, and we'll have a shot every single year. And eventually, whether it's schedule or injuries coming down the stretch or just matchups in the postseason, if we put ourselves in position 10 times, we'll get there 5. That they never really did go to that, you know, this is our year. And they always would run, you know, 7, 10, $11 million under the cap. So when a Josh Gordon came around, they could grab him. You know, they could make these moves. Did the Patriots ever view it in your mind and that it was win now and go for it the way we're talking about what the Chiefs would be doing if they went after if they pay Chris Jones right now?
You know what? I think that's a really good point. And when you're just saying that, you did kind of convince me because when we talk about these win now teams pushing their chips in, it's usually like the guys on the rookie contract who you feel like, okay, he's good enough. You know, I'm talking about the quarterback on the rookie contract. You feel like he's good enough, so you push your chips in, you upgrade everywhere else, and you say, we've got like a 2-year window here, and maybe we can win the Super Bowl. But you're right, that's not the situation with the Chiefs. You have Patrick Mahomes, you can have a much longer outlook, and so you don't have to do that. You don't have to make yourself like what the Rams, you know, put yourself in a Rams kind of bind the way that they have. And so, yeah, I think it is true. It is reasonable for the Chiefs to make those kind of moves that the Patriots made time and time again, where they ship someone off, even though they're a contender for a future pick, so that they can have that window of sustained success. If you are right, if there's a team that knows or has the best feeling about being good for the next, you know, 8 seasons, it's got to be the Chiefs, and so you could do that. I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a difficult choice. I don't think there's an obvious. I think anybody screaming that this is what they have to do is should not be listened to, right? I think you have to recognize that this is a difficult spot. And look, if you're not going to get what you want, then in a trade, like if all you can get is a 5th-round pick because nobody wants to give up the picks and pay him, then you pay him and you figure the rest out, right? That's what I think. If you can get the Frank Clark haul or close to it, let's say you get 2 seconds, right? If you get that, then I think that opens the door to what do we want to do? Because this is the other part of it. Would you rather have Chris Jones and a bunch and let's say 4 league minimum guys, okay? Or would you rather have no Chris Jones and a renegotiated Sammy Watkins, because I can't figure out why they haven't cut him unless they're trying to renegotiate him and bring him down, 2 other in the $3 to $4 million range players, and 2 second-round draft picks, and the players you can get for Chris Jones having been a draft pick. Those 5 players, right? I mean, and really you've got $16 million of cap, so with Watkins you can pay him, you know, bring him down on a low number and have him count 10 of it. 2 $3 million players and 2 second-round picks in the draft. And by the way, this team only has 5 picks, 1 through 5. They have no 6th and 7th. Which is a better spot in the team, just to give you, because I know you work at the 30,000-foot view of all the teams, they have like 1 corner with any decent starting experience, and he doesn't have much in Charvarius Ward. Rashad Fenton, a rookie, and then a kid they signed who's been in the league for 4 years and started 2 games. Those are the only 3 corners on their roster right now. So that's the spot that they're really dire in, and they don't pick till 32 as it is. What would be better just lining those 2 things up for the Chiefs, big picture moving forward?
You're starting to convince me. I gotta admit, you really have. And you know, I enter these things with like a fair amount of conviction, so I give you some credit. I think
Well, listen, and I will say this, Seth, because I love your work. Your work is a ton of what influences me to come to my conclusions. You, our buddy Eric Eager, Pro Football Focus, you guys do great work, and that's where we always talk. That's why I say you're looking at all 32 in the big picture. Now then you have to grind all the way down to, okay, individual spots. And that's hard for you to do 32 times. So, you know, these to me, I think, are the challenges that most casual fans or even good fans that just don't want to mess with the cap don't understand. It's because everybody says, well, the cap's a myth. You can just do whatever. Because the teams are very creative. And it appears that way. But in reality, it's very difficult, right? You agree?
I hate when anyone says the cap is a myth. It's a myth that, yes, you could always do something, I guess. But, A, if the cap's a myth, then why isn't, you know, then there wouldn't be a market. And, B, every dollar you spend, you have to eventually pay for, you eventually have to pay for in the cap. So it does force teams to make choices. There's no question about it. Like, if a cap's on a miss, then pay Chris Jones $50 million. I don't know, like, it's just a ridiculous thing to say. And then every team would be willing to, you know, pay Jadeveon Clowney $30 million. If the cap's on a miss, why don't you go get this guy? The cap, it's a free market, right? You know, or it's a free-ish market. Of course it is. I am from the Chiefs' predicament when they are in a situation where you have this tight cap, I can definitely see the argument of dealing Jones if you can get a good haul like you're talking about.
Right.
It would pay me because of like what I said at the top, which is you make those moves to get signed so you can sign someone like Jones. But at the same time, if you walk in as Chiefs GM today, you can't take back the Frank Clark thing. So it's like that's there. That's on the docket. You know, it already happened.
That's,
I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, and that's what we get from a lot of people. It's like, well, you know, just trade Frank Clark. Well, that's a $35 million hit. You can't trade Frank Clark. That decision was made last year. That's why I think, and this is what I've said all along to people, is I'm not so sure that Chris Jones didn't choose the path for the Chiefs last year, right? And as it turns out, I think maybe the Chiefs did that. You know, if 10 or 12 million more total would have got it done, or 10 million more guaranteed would have got it done. Hindsight right now, they should have got it done then, right? But at the time, they made an offer that seemed like for a guy who still had questions about playing against the run. And, you know, you could say, well, does he play hurt? I think he answered that, even missing a couple of games this year. By the way, he came back in the playoffs. But, you know, if what they did was, like, we're either going to give it to Chris Jones or we're going to go get Frank Clark and give it to him, and we'll have this one year where we got two wrecking crews on the defensive line, and that's going to be the final pieces to win a championship. I think it's like we can debate till we're blue in the face, but I think the decision may have been 100% made a year ago. And anything we say or do, there is no discussion now because they're looking at their cap going, look, we got to renegotiate Kelsey. Mahomes' number is going to be this big. We're going to have to add on another year to Schwartz. You know, we need to do this. We need to do this. And we just can't do it. I think that's the reality, that we aren't privy to those discussions. And it sucks to hear as a fan, but in reality, this decision might have been made 12 months ago.
That is certainly true. They will get $14 million, right, from cutting Watkins. So
yes.
Right? So that
yes.
So that helps. But
now they can do it. They can definitely fit him this year. To me, the answer is next year, and then the third year when Mahomes' number gets to the $40+ million range. How does it all fit together at that point? I mean, it can be done. I'll say this: if the Chiefs say we just couldn't do it, well, it can be done. The question is, should it be done? That's the thing. That's a dilemma, and there is no easy answer. Listen, Seth, I want to give you my final four. We've taken up a lot of your time, and I really appreciate it. It's great talking to you. Four quickies brought to you by our friends at the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. You can find out more about their ortho urgent care. It's open 7 days a week by going to kcoi.com or calling 913-319-7633. First of all, right now, we won't hold you to this, but your gut tells you the Super Bowl will be what this year? Who beats who, assuming we have it?
Oh, wow. Okay, let's go. I'm going to say that the Dallas Cowboys win the Super Bowl, and they beat the Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs.
All right.
Cowboys over Chiefs.
You don't live in Dallas, do you?
No, I don't. No.
Okay, good, good. How many championships for Patrick Mahomes in his career do you think?
Three.
Okay. It's the popular number. Bill Belichick does or does not win another Super Bowl?
Does.
Ooh, there you go. That's the odds would definitely be on no, I think, the personally, but maybe not.
Yeah.
And finally, what show have you taken to watching? Anything you're binging or taking up since we don't have sports to watch as much you can share with folks?
We've been watching Succession. I know it's not a new show, but we never watched it before, so we've been taking the time to watch that, and I've been a fan.
Yeah, good. Good to know, because I've heard good things about that. I'm going to add that to my list. Seth, you're the man. Keep up the great work. At Seth Wolder is where you can follow him on Twitter. He does great, great work along with all the folks in the analytics there at ESPN. Thank you for your time, buddy, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Doesn't that tire you out after a while? Thinking of absolutely the most clever way to say everything?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Today would have been the Royals' home opener. In what year did the Royals have their largest margin of victory in a home opener? The final score of that game was 12-1.
Oh, boy. I can't remember that game.
It's a significant year in the history of the Royals.
85.
Nope.
80.
Nope.
15.
Nope.
14.
Nope.
Then the significance of it is 69.
Nope.
Then the significance sucks.
How about 1973?
First year of Kauffman?
First game played in Kauffman Stadium was the most one-sided Royals home opener ever, 12-1 over the Rangers. Freddie Patek scored the first run. John Mayberry hit the first home run in Royals Stadium history.
Ah, very nice. Very nice. 12-1. I like that. Playing for Good Sense, you know, there. Good Sense to Go is available right now. This is perfect, especially if you are helping out, as I know many people are, helping out your loved ones, whether it's family or friends, maybe they're older, or just have compromised immune systems. Good Sense has the whole meal for you. I'm talking about the protein and the sides. Yes, they're wonderful pastas. You can get them to go that way, but also grilled Alaskan salmon, classic pot roast, lasagna, naked chicken and veggies, meatloaf even. Yes, they have been very, very popular, and they're all just $5 right now during this crisis. Go online to GoodSenseSubs.com, click what you want, and then what time you want to pick it up, and you grab it, and you go. It's Good Sense to Go. You can get them right now. Great meals with everything you need, perfect for dropping off at someone's houses, or just perfect for you, for taking home. Warm them up and eat them. It's literally that easy. It's Good Sense to Go. Of course, Good Sense founded right here in Lenexa, Kansas, serving Kansas City for 30 years, thanks to our friends at Good Sense, and thanks to our friends, our friend Seth Waller, who joined us there in our last segment. Seth, what do you think? He started out pretty much adamant about this is how important Jones is,
mm-hmm.
and it's Jones or bust. And this is what I've talked about. A lot of people will come to the program or hit me up on email or Twitter and say, well, so-and-so wrote this. All right, and I think what just played out there, and if you just caught the tail end of it, I invite you to go to 810WHB.com or to the 810 app and hear the whole conversation. Because, number one, and by the way, if you missed our conversation with Seth Kizer yesterday, please go listen to that as well. Because I think what you've got with Seth,
Anyone named Seth is good.
Yeah, Seth Kizer and Seth Wolder. You have two guys that are very knowledgeable, know what they're talking about. They understand the math, the cap, the team. They understand it all. I'd like to believe I'm one of those guys as well. So I think you've got a pretty good conversation of knowledgeable people about the situation coming at it from different directions. And at the end of the Seth Kizer conversation, I think Seth Kizer is exactly where he was. You signed Chris Jones, right? And I think he's dug in to the local side of things, to the Chiefs side. He knows the other elements that are at play there for the Chiefs. I was still where I am. I just don't see. Listen, I very much want Chris Jones there. I just don't see how it's going to work. Now fast forward to today, and Seth Wolder from ESPN, who does their analytics, and what I talked about with him was like, listen, I know the 32-team view, right? The 30,000-foot view that you take when you cover the whole league. And that's what he does, right? He covers the whole league. Then I drilled him down into some things that I guarantee you he probably hasn't spent a lot of time looking at the Chiefs depth chart and wasn't aware that there's like, what, the kid they signed has two starts. Rashard Fenton, I don't think he has any. And there's
Antonio
probably
Antonio Hamilton.
Yeah, Antonio Hamilton. And there's probably Charvarius Ward might have 16, 17 starts, 18, 19, 20 tops. That's all they've got on the roster right now.
Yeah.
And you point that out to them. You point out where they are running back-wise. You point out 21, you talk about it. And by the end of it, he's like, yeah, you make a good case. I can see why the Chiefs would trade him, you know?
It was great because – and it took something from a guy who's a national guy to not just stick to his guns and say, I'm going to – he was willing to say, interesting. Because he began by saying that definitively Chris Jones was not Aaron Donald, but he was definitively the second-best guy as far as the analytics. He talked about – when you see, you know, as far as looking forward, what's to make you think that this is going to be he's going to be good? The fact that he's 25 years old and has really had nothing but success, that he felt confident about Jones being really good moving forward. But by the time he got around to the other particulars, he kind of went, you know what? Like it just kind of dawned on him during that moment, you're actually making a really good point for that. And it came around to it. So I actually would respect that out of a national guy that he changed his mind. I mean, it's sometimes good to be consistent and say I'm not coming off my point. But yeah, the mark of intelligence is like any scientist. And that's basically what an analytics guy does. They have
It's what I say. I reserve the right to change my opinion if new information becomes available.
Yeah, that which is what science is. Science is is what we think right now. This is our theory based on the information we know. When new information comes in, they fold it into the theory and they come up with maybe an alternate theory. And that's what he did. Given the information you gave him, he altered the theory that he had on what could be gotten for Chris Jones and what his value is, and said maybe it would be better off if they found a way to deal him. And you did talk about the difficulties and maybe where teams are going is any team that trades for him is going to have to not only give up draft capital but find a way to put a contract on him with a huge percentage of their payroll and their cap being him. But I like the fact that he came around to it. Not just that he came around to what you said, but that he had the confidence in him, his own judgment, his own abilities, to say, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I should get more information, and I actually like that he did that.
Yeah, I think, a couple things. I'll reiterate that I think if the Chiefs were to say we just couldn't sign him, I think that's wrong. I think there is a way. Obviously, you backload the deal, you cut Sammy Watkins, and you've got room. You can even keep Sammy Watkins and sign him. You know, you gotta really backload it. You probably got to renegotiate Sammy Watkins and or Duvernay Tardif and or Travis Kelce and probably extend a Watkins, which ties yourself to those players even more. You can do that to create the room and then maybe even add something. But you are just kicking it down the road. And the way that these contracts go up is more than the cap will go up, right? It's like it may not be more than the total dollars, but when you have – like if you're going to have three contracts in Kelce, Watkins, and Kelce, who's now going to be 30, Kelce, Watkins, and Jones – that are all going to go from, say, anywhere from, you know, $8-10 million for Watkins, maybe like $6-7 million. I'm talking cap hit here on Kelce, and then maybe like $7-9 million on Jones to like $26-28 million on Jones to like, you know, $16 million on Kelce to like $14-15 million on Sammy Watkins. You're eating up all your cap jump right there. So, well, the cap's going to go up. Yeah, there it all is. Just those guys.
Those numbers
so it's
aren't
not
staying
just,
flat.
Yeah, it's not just that you get it done this year. To get it done this year, you're meaning, and you're not getting anyone else next year. And that's my point. Whether you like or don't like Frank Clark, like the deal, you can't deny he's a really good player. All right?
Right.
He's really good. Did they overpay for him? Yes, I think they did. But he's a really good player. And whether it's him or somebody else, right, whether it's my guy, Za'Darius Smith, who came for like 60-some-odd million over 4 or 5 years, I think it was 4 years, or maybe 5 years, 5 years on him. Whatever it is, if you're running yourself right up to the top of the cap, then no longer are you going to be able to add those guys. And there are values that are out there. And that's where we talked about with Seth yesterday, the fear of the unknown. Well, I don't know who's going to be out there. Yes, but you know someone will, right? You every year someone always is.
Yep.
Yes, there are cap cuts. There are things that are out there. So, look, there is a way to keep Chris Jones and even keep Sammy Watkins. It also means you're going to be playing with rookie cornerbacks and maybe college free agent corners, right? Is that make you a better team? You know, Chris Jones has a pass rush win rate of 18%. That means 18% of the time he beats his guy in less than 2.5 seconds. Doesn't mean he tackled the quarterback. Doesn't mean they didn't complete a pass. And, oh, by the way, 82% of the time he hasn't beaten him in 2.5 seconds. That's the best, but that's the point that Eric Eager makes. We talk about, look at that pass rush win rate. It's third best in the NFL at 18 or 19%. Yes, but remember what that means, right? Kansas City might be the third highest likely chance of having rain tomorrow at 19%. It still means 81% of the time it's not going to rain. So if you're a farmer that has crops that need rain and Chris Jones is the rain, you're likely to not get rain. Just as a quarterback is likely not to be tackled by Chris Jones on every single snap of the football, on 4 out of 5 snaps of the football, which is why the analytics will tell you and why Eric Eager will tell you, you better be able to cover. Because 2.5 seconds is an arbitrary number, but it defines what is pretty much just a beat the guy, but they're not likely to do that. You're more likely to need to cover for 3 or 3.5 or 4 seconds. So invest in that, and you're not going to have the money to invest in that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
you can only put so much on Matthew and Thornhill. I mean, it's great that you have two really good players at that position, but if they're the keys to your pass defense, you're probably getting a lot of completions on you.
Yeah. I mean, it's all on Brett Veach to make it work. He's got to make it work. There's certainly a way to keep Chris Jones. Now, I will tell you, there's also a number that every single person in this city would say Chris Jones is asking for too much. And what may end up happening is they say, listen, we're not giving you that deal, so you're going to have to play under the franchise tag. And if you hold out, that's fine, because we're not getting the trade we want. So you can either drop your demands and get a deal done, either with us or with somebody else that we can get fair trade value, to which I think the most important thing from Walter was, hey, there may just not be any trade offer out there, right? That's just it. Nobody wants to give up the picks and the money. Walder and I are exactly the same on Frank Clark. I think we both agree he's a good player. We both wouldn't have given up a first and a second and a $100 million contract. I'll give him the $100 million contract, or I'll give up the first and a second, but I won't do both. Well, the Chiefs have already done that. That's water under the bridge. Do you do it again with Chris Jones? Will some other team do it again with Chris Jones? I don't know. I mean, there's a compelling reason. Frank Clark and the Chiefs did win the Super Bowl. So if you think you're him away, and I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a prime example of a team that could feel that they're just that player away. The Colts were too, if they knew that they were going to get Phillip Rivers. That's why they did the Buckner deal, right? You got to find that team that thinks they're just Chris Jones away from the Super Bowl, and maybe they will overpay to get him in there. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll give you things you need to know next in the program.
The program with Seren Petro.
He's one of the great human beings in the world, much less a young man. Or maybe he's not so young anymore. But
weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to
tell you what you need. All right, a lot of things going on right now when it comes to news. The Minnesota Miracle will air on Fox Sports 1 tonight at 7 o'clock. That is about what, Jed? Is that about the
Minnesota Miracle where Stephon Diggs? Yeah, he runs down the sideline. Good times.
All right, so something to watch if you're a sports fan tonight. Curtis, when you start to talk, when I'm still talking, I assume you want to say something. So when I quit talking, then you should jump in.
I just said, ah, nice. I was just trying to add an exclamation point. Sorry.
I was like, what did he want?
We needed that.
Yeah. It was dynamite drop-in money.
Yeah, it was oral punctuation is what it was. Tua Tagovailoa underwent a voluntary medical recheck on Thursday. The combine, facilitated by the NFL Combine, results of the comprehensive exam, quote, were overwhelmingly positive. If the Redskins don't take him, they're idiots. We know they're idiots, so I don't expect them to take him. I expect them to ultimately.
Yes.
Yeah, he'll ultimately go three. I don't even know who is three. The Dolphins are going to have to go up to three and get him. But who is sitting at three? Is it the Giants?
The Lions are three, I believe.
Lions are three. If the Lions don't take him, they're morons. If they want to trade down and get extra picks, fine. But number three, number two should be Tua, if not number one. But he, if the Redskins are going to be dumb, he should go no lower than three. I'll be shocked if he doesn't go at least three when it's all said and done. Tom Brady leasing Derek Jeter's waterfront mansion, 30,000 square feet. On Davis Island there in the Tampa area. So I'm
I'll tweet a picture. It's pretty sweet.
It's pretty strong. Yeah, do it. Retweet it on mine if you would. Titans running back Derrick Henry signed his $10.2 million franchise tender, this according to the Tennessee Titans. So Chris Jones, listen, these other guys, Scherf signed it. Derrick Henry signed it. This is a clear sign that Chris Jones isn't coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would lead you to believe that they're not on the same page and that they're probably going to have to trade him when it's all said and done. Blaine Gabbert signs for a year with the Bucs. He'll be the backup to Tom Brady. That's good news, right? You know, I'd give Blaine Gabbert some time around Tom Brady. There's a Mizzou guy. That's a good job. I'd like to be the backup to Tom Brady. Ed Farmer, former All-Star reliever and three decades as a broadcaster for the White Sox, has passed away at the age of 70. Oh. That is not good news. RIP, Ed Farmer. The Dodgers are sending out 30-minute workouts through social media outlets for everyone to partake in. That's nice. I appreciate that. Patrick Tape, the 6'10 grad transfer from Columbia that committed to Duke, is now not committed to Duke. By the way, Syracuse, one of the schools that's still in the mix. Let's hope we can get something done there when it's all said and done. And Mike Leach apologizing today for a since-deleted tweet which showed a woman knitting her husband with a noose during quarantine. Probably not a good idea.